What's up, everybody? This is Marty Friedman, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalhead, Scott here.
And Richie.
Bringing you yet another edition of that which we like to call Focus on Metal. How we doing?
I'm good.
Good, good. It's like...
It's been 6 months since my last confession.
I'll go in, the church just will burn down. We'll see whether or not I can actually get this mixed in the next couple of days and we can get an episode out for March. Otherwise, it'll be in April, but I think we'll be able to manage it. But anyways, got lots of stuff going on to dig into, so we can do that. And definitely, I think there's been a lot of like stuff in the music press lately that's interesting. But one thing, I don't know if you saw this at all or not, but Kiss, along with a company called, I think it's called Precious Sounds, they put out a special single for Strutter. Did you hear about this?
Oh, the gold one?
Well, there's two. So there's the one that's solid gold, playable. They're going to make five of them. And there's got Savorsky, or however you pronounce it, crystal logo on the one side and around the runouts and all of that. And it goes in a little case. And I looked at the picture and it's not even a 7-inch, it's a 5-inch. So, like, I don't know how you're going to get great fidelity out of those grooves. But then they put it in some kind of a glass thing like this, too, so you can display it. And then there's a book supposedly signed by Gene and Paul and like a certificate and all that shit. Yeah, and 50 grand. 50 freaking grand.
Hang on a second.
It's still available.
Strutter is on
the first
debut
album. Yeah.
But what anniversary is it? An anniversary? Because that was 74, wasn't it?
It's like a 50th thing to do it. So
was the first album 74?
Yeah, 73, 74, something
like
that.
So it's not even it's the 51st anniversary.
And then they redid it again for double platinum. They had Strutter 78. Remember that? But,
no.
But if 50,000 is too much for you, then they have another one that's a gold-plated one that doesn't have all the other fancy stuff that the first one does, and that's $2,500. And what was interesting is I was like, wow, like, what the hell? So I went up to that company, Precious Sounds, to see, like, well, what other stuff do they have? What other artists are they doing? So they had one other one up there. It was for, for 3 Days Grace. And it was signed by the band and stuff. It didn't have a book. It didn't have all the other fancy stuff. And that one was $1,000. But I'm like, and the thing too, I was surprised because I was telling my girlfriend about this weekend. We were out doing an errand and I said, I bet you they're sold out. I bet you that they sold out, but they didn't. I was shocked that they actually weren't freaking sold out.
You mean there's a line for crazy Kiss fans that they won't cross?
Apparently.
Now that shocks me.
Yeah. But I thought for sure I was going to go up there and see, oh yeah, those are sold out, but they actually weren't. I was amazed. But then I was looking, and I didn't even know this existed, I noticed that they had yet another new 45th anniversary Destroyer bundle, or bundles. So I've got the Super Deluxe version over there. And it's got the book, it's got pretty much everything that this new bundle has. And then I have, over in those cases, I have the 45th anniversary deluxe vinyl. One of them's red, one of them's yellow, and there's a book in there too. These new bundles, the top one that has Destroyer on splatter vinyl, as well as the Live in France release on splatter vinyl, and some other outtake ones. So six vinyls, a 5-to-1 surround mix, and then a few other extra paper goods that doesn't have, and a t-shirt. $959.
Oh my God. And you bought three of them?
I'm like, are you kidding me? Like $959. How do you even justify that markup?
Is it limited edition?
Well, it is, yeah. But,
what does it give a number?
I did not give a number. But think about like the Signals. Or the Moving Pictures one. Or the, what was the other one we talked about last time? By Rush.
Permanent Waves?
Yes. Awesome box sets.
Fantastic.
Lots of vinyl.
Yeah.
Nice hardcover book.
Yeah. 100 to 150.
Not $900.
No.
Right? Or even the, behind the new guitar box over there, there's the G3 box set, which has got the Jam album. It's got the one from Joe, one from Eric, one from Steve. Huge-ass book. Very limited. Again, not $900.
No, like, there's...
It's crazy. There's, and then they have one that's lesser that's on black vinyl. Because if you can't afford the $950, get it on black vinyl, and it's $550.
Yeah, but there's nothing... There's nothing that can justify that.
Yeah.
Other than greed.
I mean, even me, who spends a lot on vinyl, I'm like, absolutely not. I could never justify spending that much money for that. And especially when I can compare that, I'm like, I got what was supposed to be the release, and it was nowhere near that either.
But again, it's probably something you've already bought on vinyl, mm-hmm. and then you probably bought it on CD.
Oh, yeah.
And then you probably bought the remastered CD, and then you probably mm-hmm. bought... You go up from there with the box set, and then mm-hmm. it might be another anniversary box set.
Yeah.
And now they want another $500 or $900 for 90% of the stuff you already have.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is not... it is. And I can bitch and moan about it all day, but, you know, there's no fucking way I'd buy it.
Yeah.
And if someone else bought it, I'd say, well, it's your money, but... but it's like, you know, when your bank calls you and says you missed your mortgage payment this uh-huh. month, and you say, this is why
yeah.
I got the Kiss Destroyer box set.
Yeah, I was shocked. That actually shocked me more than the whole $50,000 gold album. That's kind of like at its other level.
You know why? Because you have nothing to compare that to. That's a unicorn.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
You're comparing the $900 box set to the box set you've already bought for yeah. someone else that cost you $150 or $200.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you're going, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of the $200 ones.
Right.
Like, you've got all the Metallica ones.
Yep, I do.
Right? You've got, like, from Kill 'Em All to the Black Album. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this before.
Yeah.
The quality of stuff you get, even if you don't like the Black Album, the quality of all those box sets is fantastic.
Yep.
And how much were they when they came out? $250, $200?
I paid less because it was through the being a fifth member with Met Club.
Yeah.
So I got it early access and I paid less. And so it was less than that.
Okay. But on average, you're talking when they came out originally about $200, $250.
Yeah, that's about a good average. Yeah.
Yeah. Not $995 or whatever.
And just think about the amount of just vinyl that's in those box sets.
Yeah.
Right? Because the paper goods... Well, the hardbound book, yeah, there's a certain production cost for that. But the other paper goods doesn't cost squat.
Mm.
And there's more vinyl in one of those than there is that six-disc super deluxe set.
So have you looked online? Because people do these unboxing videos, right,
yeah.
on YouTube. And you're bringing up the Destroyer one. I actually wasn't aware of it. Mm. Have you actually seen anyone unbox that and give it a critical eye over it?
There's, when you go on the Kiss Online shop, they have it like everything laid out. They got one picture where it's all laid out with everything. So you can see it all. And it's primarily six albums. Obviously, the Dolby Atmos thing is on a disc, a DVD, you know. And then the book is the exact same book I have in that one.
Hardback.
Yeah. And then it's just...
I'm not justifying paper. This, though, the price, by the way. I'm just asking.
Yeah, and then just...
Because I think it's nuts.
And then just loads of paper. Like, you know, you go in there, there's like, replica set list and song stuff. There's a whole Kiss Army original, like, kit that they would have sent out and stickers. Like, all that's in there. So they just added, like, a few more paper goods, and it was like, there's no freaking way it's worth that much. It's crazy.
Mm. That is crazy.
But thinking of crazy stuff, let's talk about the Black Sabbath Back to the Beginning show.
I had more Kiss stuff.
Do you? Okay, yeah. Well, we'll wait, and we'll come back to that.
Yeah,
then.
We'll do the Sabbath one eventually. Right, so the other Kiss one I want to talk about is... Gene Simmons being a roadie with him for a day. Have you seen that?
Yes, I did see that. Yes.
Oh, is it $13,000?
I don't even know what the
price was. It's a nutty figure that you get to be his roadie for a day on his solo tour.
Yes, you get to be work for the Gene Simmons band.
Yeah. And so you pay, like, I think it's like $12,000 or $13,000 for Gene to bark at you to go get him a coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely crazy, too.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's absolutely nuts.
But the thing I'd like to know is what sort of, how specific the work will be that you get into, because, and can you record it? What can you ask him? You know what I mean? I'm sure Gene will put on a good experience. Good is relative on what you expect and what you...
Well, it also depends on what venues he's playing, too. Because, like, around here, a lot of the venues, they're all union venues. So if you're Gene's roadie for a day around here, for the most part, you're not allowed to do anything except probably get him coffee, because there isn't a union guy to do that.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think you're paying a lot of money for... I know what it harkens back to was that box set they did that was delivered in a road case, and Gene would come to your house and deliver it.
The vault?
Yeah.
It was a vault. Yeah. It was all his demos and unreleased tracks that didn't make albums, and you had to pay him a shit ton of money and he'd come to the house.
Yeah.
Now, I could see the appeal in that because you could actually split it. I think if you got a couple of your mates together you clubbed in together, Gene would come to your house and you'd have your mates with you and you'd have a couple of hours. And I could understand the appeal of that.
Uh-huh.
But this thing is a one-on-one thing.
Uh-huh.
What exactly are you going to do?
Yeah.
Again, it's Gene Simmons. It's not you're going to a show that Gene is playing in Kiss.
Yeah.
I think there's a different... It's going to be in theaters. It's going to be... You know, it's not going to be a full arena show. Yeah. You're not going to go on this stage that has all this shit ton of pyro.
You're paying for a very, very expensive shitty meet and greet.
I don't think it's going to be shitty. And again, this is what Gene does. He pushes whatever is out there to the nth degree to maximizes the dollar. And look, like if he wants to do that, good on Gene. But
but think about it, right? Gene's a businessman, right? How much of his day is really going to be involved in being at the venue and getting things ready? He's going to be on the phone. He's going to be, you know, doing this and that and trying to push this and, like, having nothing to do with the show, right? He probably has very limited daily, like, okay, it's time to play. I guess I'll go pick up my bass and go play. And he's been doing it for so damn long, he could just do it in his sleep. It's not like he has to really worry about it, right? So I just feel like how involved are you even going to be? Because he's probably not going to be that involved till it's like showtime.
Yeah. But again, if he's not that involved and you're paying the money, he yeah. might spend more time with you.
I think he's
got
other
people to do all the other stuff.
Things.
Well, if I'm paying him 12 or 13 grand, the other things will be me all day. That's a lot of fucking change.
It is. Then you probably have to fly yourself to wherever you have to be, right?
Yeah. What, you think he's paying? Yeah. And then if the show gets postponed or...
I don't know. I just think that's crazy.
The one thing I will say about Gene, and you compare him to Paul. Paul has done nothing musically since Kiss played their last show.
Mm-hmm.
Gene just plays shows.
Yeah.
And I have to applaud him for that, because he doesn't have to do it. There's still a love with the guy to get up on stage and play that I personally don't think that Paul has.
He has stated in interviews that he does miss it. He's having, I'm going to paraphrase him, but basically he's having a hard time with the fact that there's no more Kiss. So,
well, then that tells
you
who ended the band then. It was Paul.
I think that was a mutual thing.
I think it was more Paul than Gene, though.
I don't think so. I think Gene, you got to remember too, that Gene likes to be in control. So he's like, okay, so I can go control this other new thing. And that's going to be my money-making opportunity for the moment. But and then
for a man who doesn't need any money.
Oh.
He needs his ego, needs ego stroked.
He always needs another dollar. But the other thing is that Paul does have other interests too. So he's been doing his art stuff, and he's been around doing other philanthropic things.
Has he played a show since Kiss ended?
I don't think so.
I don't think he has either.
But he was saying in an interview that when he picks up a guitar, it's like it hits him hard that there isn't Kiss anymore. It really affects him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just really, you know, I still admire Gene for doing that, that a guy will go from the level he was at.
Mm-hmm.
To now go and play theaters, and I think he's playing shows in Europe.
Yeah,
I think he might be doing some of the festival circuit that he's willing to go on at 2 in the afternoon.
Paul did the same thing, right? When Gene was busy doing all kinds of other shit and couldn't be bothered with Kiss, Paul put a band together and he was out playing shows.
Yeah, but that's that Soul Station thing, or what was
it called? He had his own little Paul Stanley thing he did for a while.
Yeah. But Kiss was still an entity that was going.
It was. It just
going.
That he couldn't get Gene to freaking do anything.
I know. That was a long time ago, though.
You know?
That was in the late 80s, wasn't it? When he had his solo band touring.
Who knows? Maybe it's the fact that he can't stay home because Shannon's going to keep his ass busy. So he's like, I think I better get out of the house and go play some shows and not have anyone tell me what to do.
I need to get 13 grand tonight.
Yeah.
I think I'll play a show.
So
I get some sucker to pay it.
It's a thing, right? It's
roadie. Like,
what motivates David Lee Roth? What motivates Gene Simmons? I don't think we'll ever really truly know for sure. You know what I mean?
Have you watched any of Billy Corgan's podcast?
No.
Okay, he's got a new podcast out. And Gene Simmons was on it. And I will say that anyone who hasn't watched it, I can't think of the name of it, but Billy Corgan's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
Yeah.
And he had Gene on it, and I've seen a lot of interviews with Gene, and you always end up with Gene that he goes where he wants to go.
Yeah.
Right? And he's a bit flippant about certain aspects of Kiss.
Uh-huh.
Billy kept going back to it. I'm not taking that. No, I want to go back to this. How do you feel about that? Oh, that's up to the fans. You know, no, I'm not asking you about the fans. I'm asking about you.
Oh, yeah. That's what I found great about Billy. That's a Billy Corgan trait.
That's what I found great about Billy interviewing Gene.
Yeah.
Billy admitted himself he was a massive Kiss fan.
Yeah.
And he just, I'm not saying he went after Gene, but he wouldn't let Gene away with some of the answers he gave him. And he did a great interview. Yeah. He had Sharon Osbourne on it. He's had Tom Morello on it, which I haven't watched.
Yeah, he's got he's had Wolfgang Van Halen on it.
Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
But Billy does a really good job.
Yeah, I've seen him come up. They come up on my feed lately, last 2 weeks. I've pretty much done nothing but watch Fractal Audio videos.
He had Sharon on.
Yeah.
And it was a good interview, but from what I've read in the past, I think Sharon was Smashing Pumpkins' manager. And they had a falling out.
Okay.
And I'm nearly sure I read about that. They didn't really touch on that.
Mm.
It was, I'm not saying it was safe, but it wasn't as, you know, I don't think he was as intrusive with Sharon as he was with Gene.
Yeah.
But he's done some really good interviews. I'm glad someone like that is doing it and he's really good at it, because one of the things I've said to you over the years is, just because you're in the business and have a name doesn't mean you're a good interviewer.
True.
And I remember asking somebody that I interviewed who's a musician, I think it was Ron Keel, years ago. And I asked him, you know these guys, you know the way the business works. Will that affect the questions you'll ask, because you know the actual real answers?
Yeah.
And he said, that's a great question, because my audience is the listeners and I have to pander to them.
Yeah.
But it does make it tough sometimes for me to ask a question to somebody in the business that I know, and I can look at them and I know they're not telling me the truth. But Billy kind of does go after him a bit more, you know, then, because you will get some of these guys and all they're interested in is, you know, they want to make sure that they're on side with the person they're interviewing. They don't want to upset them.
Yeah.
They don't want to upset the PR people. Yeah. And that might mean you don't get as much out of it as you want and what the listener expects to get.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a longtime deep fan of a lot of bands, right? He's admittedly, you know, grown up listening to all those classic albums and learning them and being that fan and doing all that kind of stuff. So he has a pretty damn good background in a lot of music history as well. And so I think, you know, it's not like he has to do like research before he talks to somebody. He's been baked in it. But I think, you know, there probably is things. So if you think about like Sharon, right, I think that's an interview that's a little different than doing Gene Simmons, because it could be that Sharon could be the one responsible for putting together some slate of shows, and suddenly they find out Billy's like, shit, I can't get Smashing Pumpkins to book anywhere because I fucking pissed Sharon off, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to Gene. And I think, you know, not that I know Gene personally, but I think I know enough about him to go that, yeah, he might get pissed, but then afterwards he'll be like, all right, I can respect that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I'd be interested to see who he has on in the future. I'm sure he'd like Geddy Lee on, and because you've seen the Rush documentary.
Yeah.
Billy Corgan's all over that about the influence Rush had on him.
Right.
But yeah, he's very impressive what he's doing so far.
That's good. Yeah. Like I said, I've been just doing nothing but watching Fractal Audio videos, trying to bake myself into my new FM9 because it's insane. So yeah, that's where my head's been.
Right. So we'll get to the Sabbath thing. It might be in this episode or another one, but what's your take on Megadeth signing for an offshoot of Frontiers Records?
Yeah, I forwarded that on when I heard about that. So it was interesting to me, not so much that they did it. It was more that they did it with Frontiers. Because on the whole, when you look at the Frontiers up till now, when you look at the Frontiers label and the people they have on it, there's a certain niche that they're in, right? There's always been kind of these boundaries in what they're doing. And thrash and, you know, the heavier side of metal always seemed to be outside of those bounds.
They touched on it. They had a I know Primal Fear had an album, maybe two with them.
But that was a bit back too.
Apocalypse. Is it Apocalypse? I'm trying to think of the name of the record. It was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. It was on Frontiers.
Yeah, but there's you can see where it's been, and so maybe the fact that they have had some, call it leadership shakeup at Frontiers, maybe they looked at that and said, we want to do something, and we don't want to have it strictly on the Frontiers imprint, but now we'll start to do this other imprint that has that kind of a harder edge to it, maybe, or something. So, as a straight Frontiers, it was like, no. But in fact, they were kind of the first signing and was like, well, I mean, in a way, I thought it's a good choice as far as product, because Dave is always super consistent with releases. He's like, every year to 18 months, he's got something new that's out, right? And he tours to support it and all that. So from that perspective, it's not like having a project signing that may never do another album, may do one in 2 years. And I granted, there's exceptions, right? Sweet Lynch, they've been pretty consistent, right? But I think from that perspective, yeah, he's a consistent artist. He's well known. He's always in the public eye, sometimes not for the right reasons, but he's always in the public eye, and tours and all that. So it's like, that's good. That's a good foundational thing if you want to pop a new imprint out. Now, what they may have given him to induce him over to that was maybe a different modicum of control.
Oh, he's got to control stuff. Oh, he's got. There's no way the Frontiers model is going to work with Mustaine.
Yeah,
where they're going to say, "I want a sounding record like this," and you're going to do.
Yeah, so I think he's going to have control over that. And I think in a way, it works out well for him too, right? Because now he can continue to have control over his output. But he also he's now working with a company that has a pretty damn good distribution setup. So he's not going to have to worry about putting an album out and it's like nobody can find it anywhere, which is good.
But the one thing with Mustaine over the years, it'll work for him until it doesn't.
That's true. That's true.
And then it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then he's vocal about it.
Yeah.
And then he goes somewhere else on another label.
Yeah. The other part doesn't work. That's probably appealing. And obviously, I don't know the back end machinations to all this, right? But there's really, with Junior not in the band, Dave is Megadeth, right? So I'm more than likely everybody else in that band is an employee.
Oh yeah.
So Dave's calling the shots.
No, but that's been the case even when Elvson came back. Mm. He was on salary.
That's true. He was. Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like a perfect thing for them to be like, okay, we get this name band, big air quotes, right? Consistent, popular. Yeah, this all works for us.
Hmm.
We'll see. And maybe they'll be able to then get some other people to go onto the imprint.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm always interested in what Mustaine writes.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of albums under the Megadeth name now.
Hell yeah.
Some of them are my favorites of all time. Mm-hmm. Some of the newer stuff's great. He always brings out stuff that's uniquely Mustaine sounding.
Yeah.
When it comes to composing and riffs and...
Oh yeah, he's got his own style. He definitely has his own style.
Yeah, and I know he's had, he's up there with, at this stage, probably with the same amount of musicians that has been in LA Guns, but he's always had great musicians playing with him.
Yeah.
Even though I might know any of these guys. Like, I have no idea of the who the new guitar player is, like what bands he was in before Megadeth. But if you're playing in Megadeth, you have to be able to fucking play.
Yeah.
Now, what sort of creative input he allows any of these guys, that's open to discussion.
Correct. Yeah. I'm sure it's, and again, no backstage stuff to know here, but I'm sure it's going to be more of he's got riffs, he's And he's always kind of like, you know, he's like the Tony Iommi of thrash riffs, right? So he's coming in, he's got riffs, he's got ideas, and then it's more, okay, I'm now going to allow you to season the song. And if you read, you know, Marty's book, there's a lot of that that's
is it
in
good?
There too. It is excellent.
I haven't
yeah,
read
it. Is. Yeah, there's definitely that kind of a thing of, you know, chunks of time where it's, Dave's got ideas, he's going to come in, this is the song, you flavor it. So, and that's probably that. That's what he needs, right? He needs somebody that
one,
can.
One of the things that's
a,
always
a solo.
One of the things that's always bugging me about Mustaine is the new guitarist he has is always the best a band has ever had until the next one. It nearly happens every fucking time he gets a guy in. That the guy is great, and then when he leaves, the new guy is great, and the guy that he had before him, or you know, a couple of years before that, oh yeah, he didn't really suit the band, and this guy is the best. Yeah. You know, he's the best thing ever, and I'm like, just stop.
Yeah. And there's definitely some that have fit better than others, and you know, I was disappointed, like when Chris left.
Right. I've seen Megadeth with, I've seen him with Marty a couple of times. I've seen him with Al Petrelli.
Yeah.
I've seen him with Chris Broderick.
Yeah.
I've seen him with Kiko.
Yeah.
Who am I missing? I didn't see him with Chris Poland. Who else played with Megadeth on guitar?
Jeff.
I never saw him with Jeff. They played in Antrim. That was a show where the Mustaine caused a riot by saying give Ireland back to the Irish.
Yeah.
That was in 88. I was only 17.
That was the last time he was mistaken.
He said that was the last time he said something he shouldn't have. Am I missing any guitar players? I don't think I am.
I think you have them all.
Okay. Yeah, I think I do. But they all could play.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's a list of players that all can fucking play their instrument.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I bet you, if you were to ask Mustaine, he'd still love to have Marty in the band.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think he's the one, I think he raved more about Marty than he did about, I think all the rest of it was lip service, that I have to kind of say this, maybe, because he's the new guy, but he's always raved about Marty.
The only other thing, though, is that, I mean, and you're right, everybody he's had is, they're fantastic players, right? Kick my ass. But it's, Marty was able to bring, like, whole other dimensions in there that other people didn't bring, you know, bizarre freaking scales and modes and like, what the hell, how did he come up with this? And I think that's the whole thing. And you can, you know, you see it with the fact that, you know, Marty moves to Japan and is able to start like actually legitimately being accepted in like J-pop stuff. Because
he's so versatile, a player.
He can do it.
And a writer, yeah.
But he also can understand behind it, not just like the concepts, but even like the social implications of where that influence has come in and all that. And he absorbs it all. He's just an amazing player.
In the book.
And he freaking loves to play.
Yeah, in the book, and I haven't read it yet, how big into the Risk album does he go? And he's leaving the band.
Pico's into it fairly well.
Okay.
And, you know, the disappointments in it and everything. And, yeah, there's a lot in there. And it's a – I know a lot of people probably want to buy it and want to read, you know, I hope the whole thing is, you know – All Megadeth, and it's not. But there's a good chunk of it that is. But there's also
that's because he
did a nice balanced thing of you know what he was doing before, what he was doing you know when he was in that band Hawaii and
kind is there of a lot of Jason Becker
that,
in it?
And there's Jason Becker stuff in there, and so yeah, the whole you know cacophony, all that stuff. That's he
Mike
talks
Farney.
About all that, and then there's a lot of what he did you know and what he's been doing in Japan. So yeah, it's a pretty decent balanced book, and it doesn't go through that like I'm gonna wax poetic for the last chapter and as kind of like this gratuitous why the fuck did this
does he talk a lot about Nick Menza in it?
Not like tons. Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as being a bandmate and relationship and that stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Does he go into the failed reunion that he
has?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does.
That's all in it?
Yeah.
I know he's done interviews on that, and he said that the money he was offered was laughable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he has done and continues to do quite well with everything that he's doing in Japan. And I think part of it too, so which is nice with the book, is getting into that whole, you know, moving to LA, being literally hungry and just continuing to be steadfast in what he was doing and stuff. And now, rather than rest on his laurels, he like has this opportunity to work and be appreciated, and he just freaking loves it.
Well, he's kind of a pioneer in that stuff, because a lot of the American musicians, they go to Japan to play shows because they had the audience there. Mm-hmm. He went to Japan to live there, mm-hmm, and absorbed the culture,
yeah,
and stayed there.
Yeah.
That to me is mind-boggling, because the culture over there is, I'm not saying it's completely different, but in many ways it is.
He goes into that too. He goes into even the fact that he is, you know, you're an outsider until you're not. And it's hard to be the not. And he has been very, you know, he's shown himself to be like not being a weasel, and how he's really, you know, so he's earned his acceptance into it, but he said it was very, very difficult.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
And start with the language.
Yes.
And then, you know, the way they behave over there.
Mm-hmm.
They're a bit more, how would I say this? Structured and disciplined.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's a lot of
efficient,
rules. And he talks about the you know, he was fortunate. He got hooked into with this manager that basically has done like the world for him, and really looked out for him, and really been a partner, and not just been like I can just like suck money out of this guy kind of thing, and comes through for him all the time, and looks out for him, and tells him when something comes up, and Marty's like, oh, I got to do that, and it's like, you shouldn't do that.
He must come back here now sometimes and go like, what the fuck? I don't miss this.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good book. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to read it.
Yeah, definitely a good book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing else this week. We can get to the Sabbath thing in the next one.
Sure. So we can do that.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. All right, then, that's it. There ain't no more stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself
and Richie,
have yourselves a good metal week. And until we talk to you again next week, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.